Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Midwest Harp Festival is celebrating its 15th anniversary as harpists from up to 1,000 miles away have converged on Tulsa for a series of concerts, classes, and ensemble work. There have been concerts each evening through the festival, and this evening, festival guest artist Janet Whitman will perform an unusual concert. The first half will be a more traditional recital of classical, Celtic, and folk tunes. The second half is a program they call the Astral Harp Experience, which combines the astrophotography of her husband, Kevin, with a series of harp arrangements by Whitman herself. Janet Whitman is my guest today, a graduate of the Curtis Institute. She's performed as a soloist with regional and local orchestras in and around Southeast Pennsylvania and is an active freelance musician. She's also the founder of the Brandywine Harp Orchestra, one of the few year-round active professional harp ensembles in the United States. For over 20 years, she worked for the DuPont Company as the harpist at the Hotel DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware. Still performs at the DuPont's Longwood Garden Estates. In the 1990s, she began playing the Celtic harp and won the U.S. National Scottish Harp Championship and was featured at the Edinburgh International Harp Festival. Here she is playing an excerpt from a Celtic piece she'll be performing this evening. The music of my guest today, harpist Janet Whitman. She'll be performing this evening at 7:30 in the Lorton Performing Arts Center on the University of Tulsa campus as a part of the Midwest Harp Festival. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Janet Whitman, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're here in Tulsa to do a recital for the Midwest Harp Festival. And this is a series of festivals that have popped up around the country to revive the fortunes of the harp. You know, the harp for a long time, it was like the epitome of culture. If you had a restaurant or a hotel, you know, it was one thing to have a cocktail pianist, but it was another thing altogether to have a harpist. And of course, it's just this wonderful, classy instrument. It seems like the harp has fallen on hard times in recent years.
It has. I think the economy has really put a wrench in people's pockets. So they're trying to save money, and music is the first thing they put on the chopping block. But thanks to these harp festivals throughout the country, it keeps the pot stirring. And in the East Coast, you'll see the Somerset Harp Festival in New Jersey. You'll see the Southeast Harp Festival in North Carolina. There's a lot of festivals popping up, and harpists are using them as their mecca to learn new repertoire, to make connections. And I think this is the 15th year of this festival.
Right. So. And it's also to teach a new generation, because it seems like with the harp disappearing from your fine restaurants and, you know, hotels and sort of classy events, if you will,
yes,
young people don't see it except unless they go to a symphony orchestra concert.
Precisely. And there's wonderful teaching and wonderful students out there, and they need opportunities to perform and to meet one another. And these festivals really are a very important part of that. When I was young, the only thing that we could do as a serious harpist was to go up to Camden, Maine, where there was a harp colony.
Harp colony?
Yes. Carlos Salcedo was the harpist,
right,
who established the harp department at Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, where I went to school. Of course, he had long gone since then. But he and other Philadelphia musicians would summer up in Rockport in Camden, Maine, and they would bring up their music. And Carlos loved women and young harpists. So he would encourage them to come up to study with him. And he had a home up on Penobscot Bay, and he would make you come to lessons in a white dress. And it was quite the to-do. And when he passed on, the house was given to Alice Shalafu, which was the Cleveland Symphony harpist, and she taught up there till she was in her 90s. So in the 70s, when I was in high school and early college years, I went up there for, and you were required to stay at least 6 weeks, and you would be required to play about 5 to 6 hours a day to prepare for your 2 lessons a week. And it was a real porthole of hard work, and that's where you got most of your repertoire learned.
And of course, Carlos Salcedo was also, you can't go to any ensemble where a harp is playing where you won't hear a piece by him, because he really is one of the major contributors to the literature, I think, isn't
he? Yes. Yeah, his works are iconic, especially his Song in the Night, which I'm playing in tonight's concert. He wasn't a romantic player, but he was very precise and edgy. And I think harpists need to understand that when they play his music, not to over-romanticize it. So that's why I picked this piece of his that I'm playing tonight, to show harpists that, you know, you really have to follow what he wanted, every dot and every T, every fingering, every gesture. It's very dynamic. I was fortunate enough to learn that from Alice Shalafu, who was off, you know, a student of his, and Marilyn Costello, who was my teacher at Curtis and also a former student of Salcedo. So he was very iconic, and it was a nice contrast between what he did and the beautiful romantic side of what Marcel Grangeny established in Juilliard. So you have two different types of people writing and performing on the same instrument with unique styles, and it just makes it exciting for performers to see the contrast.
Now, I think a lot of times when people think of the harp, they think of how it's used in an orchestra as sort of this, either in ballets where it's sort of doing a, you know, bass and an accompaniment, plunk, chunk sort of thing, or, you know, your big sweeping.
Yes, yes.
But there's this whole other side of the harp repertoire.
Absolutely. I never felt called to play in an orchestra or ballet. I've done some local symphony and some solo work with them. But my true thing is to make it accessible to the audience, to have different styles to play. For instance, tonight I'll play some Celtic harp in addition to the formal pedal harp. And I like to write and compose my own arrangements for music. And I don't think they're going to expect to hear a Noel Gay piece called I Took My Harp to a Party and Nobody Asked Me to Play. So that's kind of, you know, engaging, I hope, for the harpists as well as non-harpists for tonight's concert, because it's a really great, funny song, and it was very popular during World War II, and it was sung by Gracie Fields, who was, you know, our version of Carol Burnett.
Right.
So this is the kind of music that I like to throw in some of the programs, so it's not so serious all the time. Our society is not serious. We like to have fun.
Well, let me ask you, you talked about growing up and getting that training at a pretty early age. A lot of that disappeared for about a generation, didn't it?
I don't really. I was on the beginning of it. When I was first started, there were no other harpists around. I was kind of like one of the pioneers in southern Lancaster County. There were a few others north of Lancaster, but I think it really took off maybe 30 years ago. Things were really hopping with harp. I think because of the economy and the shift in cultural likes and dislikes, the harp has sort of fallen out of favor, except the Celtic harp really surged about 10, 15 years ago with
now,
Riverdance.
Did you learn that in response to that, or had you always been a Celtic harpist?
Right, no. In fact, when I was first starting off, there were no decent Celtic harps in the country. The only true Celtic harp you could get was out of Ireland, and they would fall apart when they came out here, because the wood just wouldn't last. So I was thrown into a classical route, which I love very much, and I didn't start playing Celtic music until about 30 years later, when I was interested in my Scottish roots, and I started going to Scottish harp competitions and workshops, and I won a few and got to go over to the Edinburgh Harp Festival in 2000, and then 9 years later, I was invited to bring the Brandywine Harp Orchestra over there to perform. So it's been a little adventure and a journey that I didn't expect to have to take.
Now, what's the difference, other than the fact that you don't have floor pedals on a Celtic harp? What are the big differences in how you play?
Very good. I have a very strong basic technique on the classical harp. It has to be very strong. With these smaller harps, the pedal harp has 47 strings, while the smaller Lever Harp will have about 34 is a good size. That's what I'll be playing on tonight. And to make the sharps and flats, you have to use levers. So I'll be doing
instead of floor pedals.
Right, instead of the 7-foot pedals on the pedal harp, I'll be flipping lots of levers.
And the techniques of playing it is pretty much the same?
Good question, yes. It's a lighter touch, and I'll be doing some Scottish marches, which use specific bagpipe ornamentation sounds from the harp. So you have to play it differently than a pedal harp. You can't play it with the same full big technique, otherwise you'll just overplay the instrument. You have to have a more lilting dance quality to your touch on the mm-hmm. Celtic harp. It's fun.
And so it's a completely different touch from playing a pedal floor harp, what we call a classical harp. I guess that's probably what non-harpists would call it. But there's a stronger touch.
Yes. The pedal harp requires, since it's twice the size, and the strings are so tight, it's like pulling piano wires down at the bottom. You have to have a big elbows up, stronger pull on the strings. And with the lever harp, your elbows can relax. You don't have to pull as hard. But there's more challenges with getting the levers up and down quickly, because I just don't want to play simple music. I like to make it complex and full-bodied as much as I can with the Celtic harp.
My guest today is Janet Whitman, one of the guest artists for the 15th Annual Midwest Harp Festival, which has been going on all week in Tulsa. She'll be performing tonight at 7:30 at the Lorton Performance Center at the University of Tulsa. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. She's based out of suburban Philadelphia, I think is the best way to describe it, and mm-hmm. performs in Delaware, New Jersey, and eastern Pennsylvania. She also has the Brandywine Harp Orchestra, which she founded about almost 15 years ago, and writes a lot of arrangements, which now harp ensembles all across the country are using. Now, your first half, as you mentioned, the first half of tonight's program will be more traditional harp recital. You'll be playing, you know, works from the Baroque and classic era, some modern pieces, some folk songs, some of the Celtic harp things, some folk arrangements of Simple Gifts and some Shaker themes.
Yes.
The second half, you do a completely different thing. This comes out of your collaboration with your husband, who runs planetariums, right?
Right. He does planetarium shows at the North Museum at F&M College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And he loves stars and planets as a child. And he's been working at the North Museum for 20 years. And he started taking his own astrophotography photos outside our window in Southern Lancaster County. We have some dark skies. He also took some trips out west to take some really great clear sky pictures. And he did a meteorite show with slides a few years back, and I thought, well, let's do something together with music and your astrophotography. So he adds the Hubble Space Telescope, fantastic pictures, and we'll do different segments. We'll start off with the galaxies, and he'll take you on a tour of all the different Milky Way, the nebulas. It's very complex, and then I'll do a very spacey version of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And then we'll segue into a piece called The End of a Star's Life and How Stars Die. And I'll be doing Celtic tune called Carolyn's Dream, followed by Stairway to Heaven of Led Zeppelin. So
mainly you'll be projecting these images,
yes.
and then you'll be accompanying them with the, everything from the solar system to the moon, the planets, back to planet Earth.
So it might be fun for musicians to say, okay, well, now they're going to talk about the moon. I wonder what piece she'll do. Well, I'll do a Van Morrison's Moon Dance. And then I'll do a segment on sun. And I'm going to be doing There Is No Sunshine by mm-hmm. Bill Withers, and then going into a Bobby Hebb, Sunny.
Now, see, those are very popular songs that people
think
of those of having to have rhythm sections.
Yes.
And can you do that on the harp?
Yes, you can. So you have to come out and hear it. In the first half, I do a real bluesy version of Amazing Grace that people will have never heard on the Celtic harp before. You can do with the lever slides, you can make a blue note. You can bend those notes
right.
with the lever. You can do it fast or you can do it slow. So you really can't do that as successfully on the pedal harp. So that's why I enjoy the Celtic harp, because of the bluesy sounds you can get out of the levers.
there was a famous harpist in the late 70s, Andreas Wollenweider.
Yes, yes.
And you know, he was doing sort of spacey music at that particular time. And he showed a different side of the harp. But there's this other side, this sort of taking popular music and putting it on the harp that seems to have happened in just in recent years. Although I guess if you play in a hotel or you played in the upscale restaurant, that's sort of part of that gig too, isn't it?
Yes, yes. You want to play Moon River. You want to, well, this generation doesn't know Moon River, but that's probably why the Hotel DuPont decided to go with more of a cocktail pianist after 25 years.
Now, you played at the hotel for 25 years.
Yes, I did, up in the very formal dining room called the Green Room. Very exclusive. I was up on a musician's balcony that was designed in the 1920s by Mr. DuPont.
Uh-huh.
And actually, Mrs. Green is the one who designed the room. It's not a green room by any means, but it's a very formal dining room, and it was beautiful. The harp sound just cascaded into the diner's bowl of soup. I mean, it was really beautiful, and I really enjoyed that gig until a new manager came up and decided the harp was just a little too old fashioned. So away I went, and a cocktail pianist has been there ever since. So it was time to move on, and I sort of refocused my energies towards developing a harp orchestra, which was I was.
Now, how did that come about?
Yeah, the Irish Harp Orchestra was fashioned by Janet Harbison, a well-known Irish harper in Ireland out of Belfast, and she had done that a good 30 years ago, and they got to play with the Chieftains, and she's very well-known. So when I was over in Edinburgh, Scotland, I was also familiarized with the Scottish Harp Orchestra. So I thought, well, I have good enough students. The economy kind of hit us hard, so pedal harps weren't quite as affordable as the smaller lever harps. So I was able to really get some fine students going and to form a harp orchestra. And we performed over at the Edinburgh Harp Festival in 2009, and we were the first American harp orchestra to ever be invited.
Now, are there many harp orchestras in America?
I think we're the only one.
Really?
There are pedal harp orchestras, and they're wonderful. They're more designed for students, pickup situations where they might do one concert a year or something, mm-hmm. but we're the only continuous playing orchestra. I have some members that have been with me for the full 15 years. I'm always looking for new talent because the students are very good, the young students, but they move off and go to college, and and then we miss them. But we have some real strong staples that are there all the time, and our shows are wonderful. We play at Longwood Gardens, and we do concert series, church concert series, and we do outdoor events. And I'd say we do an average of 6 to 8 concerts a year. Very seasonal. We'll do a holiday show. We have mm-hmm. a Halloween show, which mm-hmm. is a hoot. I'm Professor Harp a lot. I dress up. Actually, the most popular YouTube video I have is me and my family's pumpkin patch playing moon dance as Professor Harp a lot. I think I have about 9,000 hits on that. So it's a fun thing to check out on YouTube.
My guest today is harpist Janet Whitman. She is the guest artist for the Midwest Harp Festival going on in Tulsa this week. She'll be performing tonight at 7:30 at the Lorton Performance Center of the University of Tulsa. How did you get started playing the harp yourself? Because, you know, I think of, you know, the harpists are always the first out the door at the orchestra because they're usually there an hour
the
and a half. They're the first one there. They have to tune the doggone thing mm-hmm. for about an hour and a half before anybody else gets there. How did you get started? And, you know, it's you have to have a hand truck. You have to have everything to play a harp. How did you get interested in it?
I grew up on a farm in southern Lancaster County. It's a five-generational farm. Tobacco farming, corn, wheat, grains.
Yeah.
So we weren't musically inclined. But my mother was a wonderful, and she still is, a play-by-ear pianist. She can sit down and play any hymn or any tune that she has in her ear. So she wanted us, I come from a there's five kids in our family, and she made us girls take piano lessons. There was a sweet little lady named Miss Fite who would come around and give piano lessons to all the farms, as long as you had a piano in your home. And we took piano lessons. And then when I was 11, the school was encouraging us to play an instrument. And I had an idea of playing the harp out of going to Sunday school, hearing how David played his harp for King Saul. As a nervous child, a quiet child, I thought, oh, wouldn't that be great to help people feel better if I would learn, if I could play the harp? Fortunately, my mother went with the idea, and she said, well, we'll look into it. And I was at a doctor. I had some knee issues as a child, and she said, the doctor asked me what I wanted to play, and I said, I want to play the harp. And my mother said, well, we need to find a teacher. He knew of one. So I was able to start with a fine teacher. She was a Juilliard graduate out of Lancaster, and then she moved away to Seattle. So I was more geared to go to the Philadelphia area. And my first harp came down the farm lane in a mushroom truck. And so I was very dedicated as a child. I wanted to do, I just wanted to glorify God and to do my mother proud, my father as well. So I stuck with it. And 45 years later, I'm still with it.
You participate in festivals around the country. Are kids still wanting to play the harp?
Yes. Again, because of the quality of lever harps out there, it's affordable. Mm-hmm. You can get started, not too expensive, you know, between $1,000 and $3,000, you'll get a nice lever harp. If you get a good teacher giving you a good start, then you can decide if you want to really go for the big bucks with the pedal harp.
How much does a pedal harp cost these days?
I'd say the low end is about $10,000.
Wow, that's an incredible investment.
It is an incredible investment. Yes, and that's probably why there's not as many pedal harpists as there are lever harpists. But it's a real honor to be able to play a pedal harp these days because of the expense. There's lots of great teachers out there where there weren't as many when I started, and there's more opportunities to go to festivals and things like that. And there's really great students coming out of great colleges. So I think the most difficult part, I think, is for a young professional harpist to be able to find work. Most of all, we have to kind of find and make our own work. I publish music.
I think that's the big thing, is you have to make your own arrangements, basically, to be a professional harpist.
Yes, you do, especially for the harp orchestra, the ensemble music. There is more now than there used to be, but having my own harp orchestra has sort of given me incentive to write for ensembles, two or three parts. And if I didn't have the harp orchestra, I might not be too. It'd be more geared to solo work. So I'm really glad that I can diversify and do the classical and do the Celtic and do the harp ensemble, do the publishing, do weddings, you know, do the freelance work, and occasional orchestra work. They're not as prominent as they used to be. So it really does force yourself to get out there and make your own way, which is, I guess, a good thing. It's the American way of doing things. Enterprising and trying new ways of creating and to making a living.
Yeah, well, we wish you success in
that.
Thank you. And we hope a lot of people come out tonight as a part of the Midwest Harp Festival. There have been concerts every evening, and tonight it will be my guest, Janet Whitman, doing her Harp Chronicles and Astral Harp concert tonight at 7:30 at TU. Janet, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. I enjoyed being here.
Harpist Janet Whitman speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She's the guest artist for the 15th Annual National and International Midwest Harp Festival, going on all week long at the University of Tulsa's Lorton Performance Center. She'll be performing tonight in a program titled Harp Chronicles and the Astral Harp Experience. That takes place this evening at 7:30 in the Gussman Performance Hall at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus. Thank you. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Connie Cronley.
Well, drat. I was feeling really good about downtown Tulsa and how it's been spruced up and revitalized, and now I've had a setback. You know that bromide, pride cometh before a fall? That's me. Here's what's happened. I read all the buzz and burble about how downtown Tulsa has been upgraded, and I chucked it out myself. New attractive restaurants downtown? Check. Spiffy clubs? Check. Even a rooftop bar. Museums? Check. Even a monthly art crawl. A garden and outdoor stage? Check. Even new grass in the garden. Streets and sidewalks well lighted and safe? Heck yes. The police department says downtown is the safest part of the city. Only 2% of crimes happen downtown. I was just about to invite friends and family from really big cities to come visit. Now, the last time I had a guest from New York, he took one look at our deserted downtown and said, "What happened? Did the neutron bomb hit?" So with all these fine changes, what rained on my personal parade? Our panhandler, that's what. We may have more than one panhandler, but I've only seen one at a time. At my neighborhood post office, at a Midtown service station, at an East Tulsa big box store, and of course on access roads by the bypass. I've even seen a panhandler downtown. Now my gripe is that our panhandler, or our panhandlers, all look alike. Hot, tired, and poorly dressed. And exactly what is a panhandler? Well, the synonym is beggar. When I think of beggars, I think of people in rags. Are panhandlers also the kids holding up signs that say car wash? Or firemen at intersections collecting donations? I do know that not all panhandlers are homeless. Some are entrepreneurs and make as much as $50,000 a year. If you're interested in getting to the business, you can check the internet for tips about successful panhandling. Best location, best spiel, best signs. I saw a sign of an unkempt man that said, "Needs jet fuel for my Lear jet." Nobody likes aggressive panhandling. But what depresses me about our local panhandler is his ordinariness. In Los Angeles and New Orleans and New York, panhandlers often wear interesting costumes, Spider-Man or Mickey Mouse. So interesting, tourists have their photographs taken with them. And big city panhandlers often do tricks. That's my gripe. The Tulsa panhandler isn't entertaining or creative. A recent story in the New York Times is about panhandlers in Times Square with shaved heads and orange robes pretending to be Buddhist monks with begging bowls. This is mightily annoying to authentic Buddhist monks. That's when I began to feel sorry for us in Tulsa. We don't even have bogus Buddhist monks, or street mimes in white face makeup, or even a guy painted gold and pretending to be the golden driller. Where is Tulsa's creativity? Where's our originality? Where's our panhandling entertainment? Let's see some Oklahoma work ethic here. I say to our panhandler, earn it. Give me something entertaining. Get a fake parakeet and whistle like a bird, and I'll be more likely to give you a dollar for your efforts. I'll think of your work as street entertainment, not panhandling.
Connie Cronley is the executive director of the Iron Gate Soup Kitchen, a freelance writer and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.